and a fool such as I, Bob Dylan from the Basement Tapes, Brownie McGee, Sonny Terry, I Got Fooled from California Blues, April Virch with Foolish Heart, Bright Like Gold is where that came from, and finally the Blasters finish it off with A Fool's Paradise from Nonfiction, came out in 1983. All right, you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM here in Madison, Wisconsin, WRTFM.org. The show has been The Green Morning Radio. My name is Brian Hirsch. So glad to have spent April Fool's Day morning with you playing silly songs. Hope it wasn't too much. Coming up in about 40 seconds, we got the BBC News, followed by a public affair. We got an Election Day special with Eve Galanter of the Civics Games, hosted by Shelley Pittman. Folks, go out and vote. If you have not voted already, get out and vote. Do it. Do it today. You can't get another chance. This is really an important election. Go out and vote. I'll see you all next week.
BC News.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. A BBC team has gained access to Sudan's capital, Khartoum, and has witnessed widespread destruction days after the army retook the city from the rival Rapid Support Forces. More from our Africa correspondent, Barbara Platusher.
At the presidential palace in the heart of Khartoum, soldiers are dancing and singing, convinced that regaining the capital is a turning point in the war. But it's the destruction rather than the victory that is overwhelming. The palace itself is badly damaged. We pass building after building, government ministries, banks, towering office blocks, blackened and burned. The tarmac at the international airport is a graveyard of smashed planes.
The UN says it's having to close all of its bakeries in Gaza due to a shortage of flour caused by Israel's blockade of the territory. A spokeswoman for the UN's World Food Programme said the closures would affect hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. Israel began the blockade early last month in an effort to increase pressure on Hamas to release Israeli hostages. Three key armed rebel groups in Myanmar have announced a unilateral ceasefire for a month following last week's earthquake. The Burmese military government has continued to attack militant groups, even while coordinating the response to last Friday's earthquake. A senior UN official in Myanmar, Marco Luigi Corsi, says humanitarian help is crucial.
The immediate needs of the affected communities, as in any, I would say, earthquake, are becoming increasingly urgent. Shelter, the foods, the clean water, essential household items are all in a short supply. You know, you have no electricity, you have no running water. This is a summertime, it's very hot. There are often aftershocks, and people are scared to go inside the homes.
The Trump administration has admitted making a mistake after deporting an immigrant with protected status. It's described the deportation as an administrative error. Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia was among more than 200 suspected gang members who were deported to El Salvador in March. Will Grant has more.
Mr. Abrego Garcia's lawyers have said he received protected legal status from an immigration judge after originally being slated for deportation in 2019. His legal team have urged the US government to ensure his immediate return to the United States from the mega prison, calling it a notorious detention chamber. In a post on X, Vice President J.D. Vance called Mr. Abrego Garcia a convicted MS-13 gang member. Mr. Abrego Garcia's legal team firmly denies the claim, stating that he has no criminal convictions either in the US or El Salvador.
BBC News. The US Attorney General has directed federal prosecutors to seek the death penalty for the man accused of gunning down the head of America's largest health insurance company. Luigi Mangione is facing state charges in New York, as well as federal charges for killing the United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson last December. Neda Taufik reports.
Pamela Bondi said she reached her decision after careful consideration in order to carry out President Trump's agenda to stop violent crime and make America safe again. Attorney General Bondi lifted a moratorium on federal executions that had been in place since 2021. She said Brian Thompson's murder was an act of political violence and a premeditated, cold-blooded assassination that shocked America.
Russia has conscripted another 160,000 men for military service, the highest figure since 2011, for its annual call-up. The move forms part of Vladimir Putin's plan to expand the country's armed forces. He's raised the maximum age for national service to 30, while promising that conscripts will not be sent to fight in Ukraine. Russia says the move is necessary because of the Ukrainian conflict. 19 members of a Venezuelan baseball team are seeking asylum in Spain after arriving in the country for a tour last month. The team's coach, Julio Guevara, told Spanish media that the men who remained in Barcelona wanted to make a living playing sport there. A Democratic Party congressman is delivering one of the longest speeches in the U.S. Senate of recent years, fiercely criticizing President Trump's record during his first months in office. Senator Cory Booker has now been speaking for more than 18 hours. The New Jersey senator accused Mr. Trump and Elon Musk of showing complete disregard for the rule of law. BBC News.
Do you have an insatiable curiosity about the world? Do you find yourself provoking conversations with your friends and coworkers? Are you a strong listener? Then you should consider applying to become the next host of A Public Affair, WORT's daily hour-long call-in talk program. We're now accepting applications for this volunteer position. The next host will be the voice of Tuesday's show and join a stellar lineup of folks who engage listeners in conversations on social, cultural, and political issues of importance every day of the week. We're looking for someone who is curious and well-informed, comfortable speaking on air, someone who can think on their feet, and has at least 5 hours a week to prepare and host the show. And of course, we'll need you to be here every Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. Apply by May 2nd. To find out more information or apply, go to WORTFM.org/talkhost.
6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places.
Good afternoon and welcome to A Public Affair on this Tuesday, April 1st. Happy Election Day. And happy April Fool's Day. They might go together a bit. I'm Shelly Pittman. Today is the spring election. And if you couldn't tell by the texts and the calls and the mailers you've been getting, it's really crucial to vote today. Polls are open until 8 p.m. Though, if you're in line by 8 p.m., stay in line and you can vote. If you haven't sent in your absentee ballot yet, don't put it in the mail today. Take it to your polling place. And as for what's on the ballot, well, there's a lot. There are statewide races for superintendent, Supreme Court justice, a constitutional amendment. In Dane County, we'll have the executive race on the ballot again, this time for a four-year term. Madison voters will see a race for city council. Now, about three quarters of those districts are competitive this time around. And you can check out WORT's interviews with those candidates at wortfm.org/candidates. There are other local elections, depending on where you live, like for school board or for judge, and we might talk about some of that with our guest today. My Vote Wisconsin lists all sorts of helpful information, like what's on your ballot. That's at myvote.wi.gov. And I have some numbers for you. As of last Friday, over half a million absentee ballots had been cast in Wisconsin. We might be on track to top turnout in the spring election in 2023, when voter turnout came to just over 1.8 million. So today, on a day that is supposed to be nonpartisan, we thought it might be appropriate to get some civics education. And joining me in the studio, who is someone who knows quite a lot about civics and is working to increase civics education in Wisconsin. Joining me in the studio is Eve Galanter, someone with a lifetime of public service. Hi, Eve.
Hi, Shelley. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. I'm going to read a little bit of your resume just so folks know exactly who they're talking with. So, Eve Galanter formerly headed up the Democratic Party of Wisconsin as executive director. She's served as the director of the regional office for the late U.S. Senator Herb Kohl. She's a former four-time Madison Alder, and now she interviews local candidates for office for the Madison City Channel's Know Your Candidate series, which is very cool. She's currently president of the Cap Times Kids Fund and on the executive committee of PBS Wisconsin and on the public policy committee of the United Way. But if you work in nonprofit leadership in Madison, you know Eve Galanter. She's served on a variety of other boards, including those for the Madison Public Library, the Monroe Street Arts Center, Tempo Madison. She's the past chair of the Madison Civics Club and the Wisconsin Women's Network, where she launched the Wisconsin Women's Policy Institute, which trains women leaders to be effective public policy advocates. Also a past president of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Hillel Foundation, YWCA of Madison Foundation, and the Wisconsin Women in Government, and more. But today she's here to talk about civics education in Wisconsin, and in particular, the Civics Games, a statewide high school competition coming up again this spring. We're going to get to that today. But Eve, welcome to the WORT studios here on election day today. Did you vote yet?
I did not vote yet, but I don't need any more phone calls. We've got a plan to vote this afternoon. I have a thing about voting in person.
Really?
It's so important to me that it's a ritual that I really value. And I like to say thank you to all the volunteers who are serving at the polling places. But yeah, I know it might make sense because today we could have had 3 feet of snow that I should have voted in advance, but nope. Yeah. In person.
Well, northern Wisconsin, it looks like they had some ice storms, had to move some voting locations. So there's that. Things always happen, but there's still plenty of time is the good news.
Yes.
In the same vein, I vote at an elementary school on the east side, and I ran into my in-laws. So things can always happen when you go to your polling place. I also discovered a new mural in the elementary school. So all sorts of things.
Right.
All right. Well, how do you usually spend election day? Do you usually watch the election results, or do you go to sleep and wake up the next morning?
No, I don't want a surprise. I don't want to be surprised. But there are times when, you know, how late can you stay up? And, you know, what is it you're going to do? So, yes, I watch the news. It's an opportunity. I'm hoping that it will be the end of all the commercials and that I can stop talking about what's going on and just watch the little stream at the bottom and see what's happening. Wait for the AP to see if they're going to call any of the races. Mm. Obviously not our local ones, but what's happening statewide.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Till the end.
There are a couple watch parties, I think. There's a local alder-to-be who's having a watch party. I know the Crawford campaign is having a watch party. Do you usually go to watch parties? Or
I used to. But now I'm satisfied to sit home and watch and have my own party. Right.
Fabulous. Well, thank you for joining us here on Election Day. You're here to talk about the Civics Games, which we thought would be entirely appropriate to talk about during the spring, theoretically nonpartisan election. Tell us about the Civics Games. You had your inaugural competition this time of year in 2019, and they're coming up again this spring. When did this start? How did this start? And what are they?
They started actually in 2016, at least in my mind.
Okay.
I'm holding up, none of you can see it, but Shali can, a yellowed piece of newsprint from Wednesday, January 6, 2016, the Wisconsin State Journal. And the headline read, "All three school board incumbents running unopposed."
Mm.
I don't recall being opposed to any of those individuals, but what really disturbed me when I saw that was there wasn't going to be any community conversation. There's going to be no discussion about any of the issues the challenges facing local school boards. And so I went to talk with a couple of folks about what do we do to encourage more people to run for office, to think about public service. And as you just mentioned in my lengthy bio, public service played a great deal of, was very important in my life, continues to be very important in my life. So I went to some of the organizations on whose boards I used to sit, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and others, to say, what can we do to encourage more people to run? And they said, I don't know, but we'll be with you. We just, we don't have the time to do anything about it, except we're happy to help you if you get something going. 2 years later, after continuing to see this, this pattern continue, I went to the Wisconsin Newspaper Association. I didn't know much about the organization, but I thought, look, a source of accurate information, they've got to want people who wish to serve in office and who they can talk to and who become, a source of information for them. So I went to a meeting of the board of the Wisconsin Newspaper Association Foundation. I remember taking my then maybe 3-year-old grandson. He carried his lunchbox with him. He kept saying, Grammy, when are you going to talk? I said, shh, there's an agenda. I'm on the agenda. And I went to them and I explained that I had this idea that if perhaps instead of focusing on those of voting age or of the age at which they could serve on some of these boards or committees, perhaps we should start younger, maybe high school age, where we could encourage finding out how government works. Maybe they could bring that information back home to their parents in case their parents didn't know. And so it was originally to be called the Wisconsin Civics Games, a bowl, the Wisconsin Civics Bowl. The old college bowl came back to me that I used to watch on television. But my then teenage granddaughter said, no, it should be like the games. We had just watched the Hunger Games. I said, yeah, but they were trying to kill each other. And she said, but the idea of games would be more appealing to high school students, the competition, than a bowl. And if they were interested, maybe their teachers would be interested. So I went to the board expecting them to say, thank you very much, we'll get back to you. And instead they said, let's do it. This was in the fall of 2018, and we began talking about how exactly to construct a civics games competition. Decided on teams of students. Kids like to work in teams, and a competition, and we'd have brackets, about which I knew nothing, but that's how we would construct the games on any given day, that it would be in person, that I would we would need some sponsors. I wanted to be able to offer a scholarship to members of the winning teams. And then I began working on writing questions, about 100 questions and answers that I had to work very hard to make sure were correct. And I had lots of people sort of editing, looking at them and saying, really, that is correct. I didn't know that. So we set out, we sent information out through the Department of Public Instruction to all the social studies teachers. We did press all around the state. It helped to be sponsored by the Wisconsin Newspaper Association Foundation. They got the word out. And I thought, we'll begin with regional games. And we'd go through, we'd use the boundaries of the WIAA, figuring every high school knew those boundaries. And the teams started registering. We were very excited, but they weren't falling neatly into those boundaries. So, you know, they were coming from as far away as Rice Lake and then Platteville and West Bend and Green Bay and not neatly. So I set about doing my own gerrymandering and created some new boundaries for the regions. And with the help of the what was then called the UW system, we had the regional games at the local campuses, the UW UW up in Eau Claire, the UW Green Bay, Platteville, Madison, and then the winners, the top two teams from those regional games came to the Capitol for the finals. Wisconsin I broadcast it live. And that one of those very first years, there was a foreign exchange student here from Germany. And because it was on Wisconsin I, her parents could watch it back in Germany. They could watch her compete in Madison, Wisconsin. Anyway, the governor came, the attorney general, the then chief justice of the Supreme Court, Pat Rogensack. It was quite wonderful. And the members of the winning team each received a $2,000 scholarship to the Wisconsin college or university of their choice.
That's such a fabulous story. I'm surprised at how long it took. It took you several years to get this going. So you've been working almost a decade to get these games up and running and continuing to run.
We had them up and running and continuing to run. And then COVID. And in 2020, we were ready to go with what would have been the second annual. And we had held the regional games earlier, and then we had to cancel.
Yeah. So you did something else.
I did. We did. We didn't do it that year. But the next year, I was concerned that we'd lose connections with the schools. So suitable for the, appropriate for the newspaper association, I created the editorial writing and cartoon contest, which was available to middle school students and high school students as individuals. It wasn't a team thing. You did it on your own. A middle school student wrote the equivalent of a letter to the editor, up to 200 words. A high school student, up to 500 words, like a guest column, with your view of the First Amendment. And then I thought about it and thought, not everybody's skill is writing. There are those whose skill I clearly don't have, which is art. After about third grade, I couldn't help my kids with their art projects. But we added the editorial cartoon contest. And Phil Hands, who also created the logo for the Civics Games, for those who don't know.
Let's describe it, yeah. Oh, this is very nice. This is Ben Franklin with a cheese head.
And Phil, for those of you who don't know, who is the editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal, one of the very few newspapers that still has an editorial cartoonist. And with his help judging the cartoons as well, we put that out there that year in the spring in lieu of the games, And we had a number of children, you know, students who applied, both the middle, the high school, the writing, the cartoons, and the winners were all published state, you know, in newspapers in their community. And there were cash awards for those winning submissions. It was so successful that the next year we gave it its own slot. And it's now, it now happens in the fall, and the games happen in the spring. So it's year-round emphasis on government, about civic knowledge, about civil engagement, and with an emphasis that we urge them to consider a career in public service.
That's fabulous. And it's part of several initiatives more recently to increase civic education. And we're going to talk about those too. But first, I want to say it's 12:26. You're listening to A Public Affair here on WORT. We're in conversation about civics education in Wisconsin with Eve Galanter, who has a lifetime of public service herself. Eve, I'm wondering if now would be an appropriate time to give us a sample of one or two of the questions that students might be asked at the civics games that are coming up next week.
Okay. I'm going to give you the premise on which I based a question, and then I'll give you the question.
Oh, a setup. Okay, let's go.
All right. I was watching CBS News maybe 5-6 years ago. Justice Gorsuch and Sotomayor were talking, and they were bemoaning the lack of information that people have about how government works and their ability to even know the, you know, be able to name the three branches of government. But Justice Gorsuch said that he had seen a survey where 10% of the people surveyed believed that Judge Judy, who was on television, someone who was portraying a judge on TV, served with him on the U.S. Supreme Court. It's scary, but evidently true. I mean, the justice of the Supreme Court told the story. Justice Sotomayor laughed, and they went on. That became a question for the Wisconsin Civics Games. Describe the process by which Judge Judy could serve on the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the process by which she would serve on the U.S. Supreme Court.
That seems like a great question for today. Look at you. Well, if you have the answer to that question, you want to track where Judge Judy's headed, you can give us a call at 608-256-2001. Eve, give us another question.
In 1982, Wisconsin was the first state to outlaw what type of discrimination?
Oh, I know this too. All right.
You know this too?
Only because I had to write some obits recently.
Oh.
But in 1982, Wisconsin was the first state to outlaw what type
of discrimination?
Of discrimination. I'm writing it down. So we can go ahead and read that again. Tell us what type of discrimination did Wisconsin outlaw in 1982? 608-256-2001. Or if we wanted Judge Judy on the state Supreme Court, how'd we do that? And on the U.S. Supreme Court, how would that happen? Eve, thank you for bringing these questions. And these won't be on next week's playoff games.
No, they will not.
Okay.
But we talked earlier about what people do and don't know, like the 10% who believed in Judge Judy.
Yeah, hit me with more statistics.
All right. In 2022, the Annenberg Public Policy Center did a survey of Americans asking them to name all three branches of government.
Okay.
47% only 47% could name all three branches of government. 25% is the percentage of Americans that cannot name any of the three branches of government. And 51%, the percentage of Americans who believe that Facebook posts are covered by the First Amendment.
All right.
Those numbers more recently, I'm sorry to say, they haven't improved. They've gotten worse.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a big and laudable goal, right? To increase civic participation, civil discourse in Wisconsin and, you know, the United States. Talk to me about civics education in other states. Is Wisconsin unusual for not mandating civics education in school instructional time? Are there models for the civics games, extracurricular activities like the civics games in other states?
There are, obviously, Madison, Wisconsin does not require civics education. The legislature a couple of years ago, in response to concerns raised about that, decided that the way to encourage civic knowledge was to require that all students must pass the same test that immigrants to the United States must pass before they could become a citizen. I don't know what the rate required for passage is for the immigrants. I did know that, but I can't recall it right now. But the students are required to pass with a 60% correct, which, if I recall, is like a D or something.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the mandate. And they could take it as frequently as required in order to pass it. I understand how difficult it is to require, to add on to the mandates that our teachers face every day in teaching, in high school, in elementary school. And that has certainly slowed that process of including it. Many schools do it anyway. There are civics classes. There is one teacher in West Bend who not only does sort of intramural civics games, he's a model UN advisor.
Yeah.
All of these things do go on. It requires additional time from a teacher or an advisor, someone who's willing to, you know, to work with the students who have that interest outside of school, sometimes within the classroom, but it's very, very difficult to make those decisions. There is a new bill, and you've probably got the bill. There is a bill.
SB 30, Senate Bill 30. So there is another bill in the state legislature this session to mandate civics education in all schools, including charter schools, private schools, as well as public school districts, to require civics education. I'm looking at this, but let's talk about what some of these goals that this bill outlines. An understanding of pupils' shared rights and responsibilities as residents of this state and the United States and the founding principles of the U.S.
Oh, would that mean you'd ask them, what are the five freedoms identified in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution?
Absolutely.
And see who can answer that?
Here's another goal, a sense of civic pride and desire to participate regularly with government at the local, state, and federal level, something that we are measuring today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your turnout at in your local and statewide election is one indicator of that. And, you know, I started off the show by sharing some of those statistics where, you know, Wisconsin in kind of big races is doing okay, but in terms of turnout. But typically spring elections tend to be pretty sleepy if there aren't things that are statewide, and local elections also matter. To that point, if I can go on a tangent, Eve, I'm speaking with Eve Galanter. She's a lifetime public servant joining us today to talk about the civics games here on A Public Affair. I can think of a couple notable examples, Eve, where either, one single vote really made a difference. Mm-hmm. So, for example, do you remember last spring election?
They had a toss of a coin.
Well, I think they pulled names out of a hat.
Oh, was that?
And I asked the elections commission about this, or the city attorney about this after the fact, about what other games can you decide to a tie? But, you know, that was between two alder candidates. They're matching up again today, by the way. And that was decided after a recount, dead tie, and it was a game of chance. And so that one vote really means something.
Well, it really means something. And when you have, when you don't have, as we talked about earlier, if you don't have a conversation going on in the community about the issues of concern, if the incumbent has no challenger,
right?
What's the incentive for many people? There is none.
Yeah, you fly under the radar.
Well, it's just fine. I can't think. I may have missed, over the years, one or two elections, but I can't imagine not going to vote, even if only for all the folks who were incumbents unchallenged.
Yeah. No, and I get it. There are real barriers, but My Vote Wisconsin, really helpful resource. Your polling place has to be somewhat close to you. And so polls are open until 8 p.m. And if you're in line by 8 p.m., you can still vote.
I worked this year and in previous years with the League of Women Voters interviewing candidates.
I saw that.
Those nice 15-minute segments where you really asking folks to share information about what they would do.
Yeah.
If elected.
Was this part of the City Channel interviews? Yes. So these are on the Madison City Channel, where, by the way, you can watch all sorts of meetings for the City of Madison, also Dane County. Also,
when I was on the City Council.
In the 80s.
In the 80s, WORT broadcast the meetings.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And we had a row and a half of newspaper reporters.
Oh, man.
And it was also on the Madison City Channel, and occasionally network TV broadcasters would come in with cameras to get information. That was the day. I don't know what happened, why WORT, I'm sure it was a staffing issue or whatever, but that had been going on for years.
I would say our listeners would push back now if we tried to preempt all the shows from 6:30 to 2 in the morning sometimes. Challenging thing to do.
I don't think we ever went to 2 in the morning.
But. Oh, they're getting longer.
Yeah.
We're talking about unopposed candidates and people just not running for office in general too, right? This swings the other way of not showing up to vote, but then not showing up to make your voice to run for office. I have another example from last year. Do you remember in Monona there was no one running for municipal judge?
Right. And you know how they finally got a candidate?
I think there were write-ins, right?
I was reading this small print of, all the people who are running for the different offices throughout Dane County.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no candidate. So I called someone at the State Journal. They wrote a story. People read the story. People ran as write-in candidates to become a municipal judge in Monona.
That's a fabulous story.
So the media really can make a huge difference, do make a huge difference.
Eva, I hope you also sometimes call WORT with some news tips. But thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Shelley. Well said. Well said. You got it.
But no, that, you're absolutely right. Understanding the press, you know, we have an interest in talking, having this conversation today. I'm a journalist. Having this conversation is also crucial to me. I imagine it's the same reason that the Newspaper Association signed on and is helping lead these civics games, because we all benefit with discourse and accurate information, right, and by following the rules. So it's 1240. You're listening to A Public Affair here in WORT. I'm talking with Eve Galanter. Let me throw some other questions out to our listeners that don't necessarily test your knowledge, but I'm curious in what kinds of civic education that our listeners got, and also what they might have learned after high school. You can give us a call at 608-256-2001. That's 608-256-2001. Eve, I was blessed with having a pretty good government course, right? It was actually really fun. And shout out to the social studies teachers at Fort Atkinson High School for doing that, right? What kind of civics education did you get when you were in school?
None.
Yeah.
None that I can recall. We had social studies, but no, there was, I do not recall any civics education. No.
So how did you feel called to public service? What got you interested?
I grew up on the south side of Chicago. Politics runs pretty strong in Chicago. People came to your door all the time. The local politicians, the ward captains. I think may have an old ruler or yardstick more appropriate than a ruler. But wait, could be both, from Mayor Daley, who was mayor for life, it seemed, in the city of Chicago. But I became very interested in it. And I can't tell you the specific thing that turned me on in terms of what, you know, my support for getting out there and working for someone who was running for office. But I just always felt that it was important to know about these things. And early on, maybe in the late 60s, I actually became involved with something called the Consumer Federation of Illinois. It was focused on getting consumer education in the schools. You know, unit pricing. How do you find out what on earth is in the food you're buying and eating? And later actually became the president of the organization and joined the Consumer Federation of America, and brought Ralph Nader to speak.
Okay.
Ralph Nader, yeah.
He's still talking.
We had Studs Terkel was on the radio then. I was always a fan of the great WFMT. In Chicago.
The great broadcaster. Working. Yeah.
He got in touch with me. He wanted to interview Nader while he was in Chicago. And I touched base with Nader and he said, no, I haven't got time. It's going to be in and out, whatever. So I said, well, how about if we let him ride in the taxi to O'Hare from downtown with us? Yeah. And he said, if he wants to. So I called Terkel back and said, would you be willing to ride in the taxi from, where were we? We were at the Palmer House downtown, out to O'Hare, and you could interview him in the taxi. He said, sure. And he did. And we rode out there. As I recall, there were no seatbelts in the taxi.
Wow.
Which Nader commented on. and later, that was broadcast. Nader was very, very good. He was passionate about safety.
Yeah.
That was his big focus.
So that's how you got started?
In a way, yes. Okay. Yeah, and that then it became, you know, I learned how to advocate, how to try and find your way to create coalitions.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Buffalo, New York.
So you have a long and storied career in public service, as I've been saying this hour. You served in local politics as an alder. You served as a regional director for the late Herb Kohl. You served as the executive director of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. In any of those offices, without talking about individuals, maybe we could start with city council. Are there differences in how people operate now than in your time in the 1980s?
Yes, I think so. First of all, as I've indicated, there used to be much more media coverage of what was going on in local government.
Yeah,
it's a matter of resources, mm-hmm. And we see we see the result of that. That people are not as aware as they could be or should be of what's going on at the school board, at your county or city government.
Which is ironic, right? Because these are also now more accessible. You can stream them online, which is how I watch, usually.
Right, until 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. No, don't do it.
Yeah.
But we also always met in person.
Yeah.
Now, there is an advantage. There is an important advantage to the virtual access for individuals with disabilities, for those for whom traveling downtown for a late night meeting, whether it's the plan commission or the city council or the ALRC, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. that it does strengthen the ability to access. On the other hand, those who are making the decisions are not as collegial as we used to be. It's harder as a new person on the council now to come in and learn from the others who have been, who to be mentored as effectively about, here's what's happening. No, you know, as you sometimes hear the mayor say, no, Alder, we're not in discussion now. There is a motion, you know, we're voting. We need to do this or that. But just the ability to go and schmooze for a break, during a break, to go explain to someone, would you help me with this? You know, just give me a second and we'll talk. I see that as a big difference in the way in which I think previous councils and boards used to work and perhaps worked more effectively, at least it seemed to me. We even, after we disagreed and voted and had everything, we'd all go out to the Essen House and have a beer.
Yeah.
There was, you know, where we never talked about votes, we were talking about family or what was going on in our lives with people with whom we had just disagreed.
Yeah,
it makes a difference. I still have close friends from those years on the city council, some of whom, with whom I agreed most of the time, or even all the time, and some with whom I might not have ever agreed, and yet we're still friends.
Apply that same question to statewide in your capacity as head of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, heading up the late Senator Kohl's office as well. You know, I think of Wisconsin as sort of a microcosm of our national stage. And of course, you see similarities all the time, like federal cuts to labor. Right. That sounds familiar, right?
Right.
Act 10. But do you think that the tone, the civic discussion, civil, you know, bipartisan nature has changed in Wisconsin, or do you think it's always sort of been like this?
It seems to me like there used to be more collegiality, a greater effort at by some legislators to purposefully work across the aisle in order to bring something, you know, together. I remember when years ago, I went to speak to the Madison Civics Club. I was invited.
Yeah.
And
you later headed that up, right?
I later became the chair, the president. Yeah. But when I was their public affairs speaker, the title of my talk and the first line of my presentation was, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." And that was it elicited exactly the same response by that entire audience as you just had. Mm. And for the time allotted, I just went through, you know, a typical day in the office of a U.S. senator, offering real help. And sometimes I'd get frustrated because I wasn't able to help. I remember one time I was working late and I answered the phone, and this woman caller said, "Oh, are you real or are you an answering machine?" I said, "No, I'm real." I said, "Oh, I was hoping to just call and vent." I said, "Okay, tell you what, I'll hang up, you call back, and you can just vent on the machine if you don't want to talk to me." And she said, "Great, that's just what I feel like doing." I said, "Fine, thank you."
Yeah.
Do people still, there is this sense of frustration that people are not able to talk with someone taking that message.
Right.
That there are, I mean, we have all the wonderful technology that you can email, you can text, you can call and leave a voicemail. But talking to a staffer who may be able, if they have time, to answer your question and explain why. I recall during the Justice Thomas hearings, Justice Clarence Thomas, when he was nominated for the Supreme Court, and Senator Cole was on the Judiciary Committee, and the phone did not stop. I remember actually my right arm got really, I was lifting the phone so often that my right arm, I think I had a bigger muscle in my right arm for a while. People were calling to express, and they wanted and liked the idea that there was someone with whom they could share their opinion.
Yeah. Makes you wonder how many people are calling Senator Cory Booker's office today.
Yeah. Well, or how many people have dared to call WORT and answer a question?
I could tell you. We get callers, but Eve Galanter, we have just a few more minutes left in our program today. I really appreciate you coming down here today and sharing your perspective and wisdom. You have an important call to make for help with the Civics Games. So the Civics Games, they're coming up next week, the
playoffs.
The playoffs, thank you.
We can't call them regionals anymore.
Oh,
because
really?
They're not regions.
Okay, so the playoffs are next week. That's
right.
Next Wednesday and Thursday.
Right.
And you need help.
I do need help. The wonderful reason I need help is we have more students participating than ever before.
This is catching on.
Woo! And we need more. We're doing the playoffs virtually by Zoom, and we need people who might be willing to be a judge, a virtual judge. You could be the person who asks the question, and yes, you will have the correct answer. You could be the person who's keeping score so that at the end we know which team won in that particular round. You could be the person who is monitoring the Buzz In. Yes, there is an app that the students are using on their phones to buzz in when they think they have the right answer to the question.
Wow.
If you would be willing to do that, you could call 608 608-283-7620, or you could email me at wna@wnanews.com. You know what will happen? You're going to watch these students, and no matter how you've been feeling lately, it will give you hope for the future.
And I can imagine I'd learn a thing or two.
And you could learn a thing or two.
Well, it's fabulous to have you here in the studio and hear about, you know, this thing that you have led for the last almost 10 years, help grow. And I'm glad to hear that it's continuing to grow. We, in full transparency to our listeners, we had invited you on last week originally to join us with the legislative semester folks and folks from the Madison West High School Civics Club, which is a new group, right? And they are already getting involved in local government.
But they're not on any of our teams. I was looking forward to converting them.
I'm happy to put you in touch, and I think they're getting there, okay. Right? I think they're getting there. And I just, your final thoughts in this kind of growing, let's talk about a little bit what's next. We are in a legislative session. And there is this bill, SB 30. It's been passed by the Assembly, not by the Senate. It was passed by the Assembly last month. Your thoughts on this bill more broadly? Do we, how much of this will this, if you assume that there's a problem, how much of this will this fix?
I think I can say it definitely will not hurt. I think it may not solve the universal problem that we are facing.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that will move us forward toward greater civic and civil engagement,
yeah.
I think it's worth giving it a shot. I think let us try it and see if it makes a difference. If more than, 32% of Americans, I don't know what the percentage is in Wisconsin, can name all three branches of government. But more importantly, not just naming them, but understanding fully the role that each of them plays
in
our democracy.
Yeah. Now this bill has some, I always check the ethics information, Eve, because mm-hmm. that's interesting. It has some folks who are in favor, the American Legion, Department of Wisconsin, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and the Wisconsin Newspaper Association. So those are interesting bedfellows. Those opposed, the Wisconsin Catholic Conference, Wisconsin Family Action, and the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin is sideways on it. But we'll be watching that, and we'll be watching the outcome of your civics games as well, and I wish you good luck with those.
And then don't forget, by September, we'll be announcing the 2025 editorial writing and editorial cartoon contest for middle school and high school kids. Any listeners with kids, grandkids, neighbors, let them know. The first place prize, a cash award of $500.
Pretty good. Pretty good for something you might write on Facebook anyway. Eve Galanter, I want to thank you so much for joining me in the studio today.
It's been real pleasure. Thank you. And to the audience, thank you for listening. If you haven't voted, please vote and consider being a virtual judge.
All sorts of things that you can do as we wrap up our hour here. Eve Galanter has been our guest. She's lifetime public servant, former executive director of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, former director of the regional office for the late U.S. Senator Herb Kohl, former Madison alder, and she now interviews local candidates for office on the Madison City Channel, serves on way too many boards than I can go into today, but I want to thank you again for being here. Thanks for listening to A Public Affair. I'm Shelley Pittman. I want to thank our engineer, John Lang, our producer, Sarah Gabler, our receptionist, Steve. Don't forget to vote today. My Vote Wisconsin is your best friend today. That's myvote.wi.gov. Stay tuned here to WORT. Letters in Politics is up next, followed by 3 hours of jazz, Democracy Now!, and the 6 p.m. local news. That's all here on WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. Would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream. Media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With an admission that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream. Media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream. Media distorted.
This is Pacifica Radio's Letters on Politics. On today's show...
They pledged themselves to conduct a strike that would be a nonviolent strike. Something unheard of in labor, especially in farm labor strikes up to that point. And then I asked the members to give me 5 days in which to try and get to the growers and see if somehow we could head off the strike and that by doing this that maybe we could negotiate with them. And I was kidding myself. We did everything under the sun that we could to try and get them to talk to us, and they wouldn't. They ignored us. And so the strike was called then at 5 o'clock in the morning on September the 20th on a Monday. And we've been on strike ever since.
On this International Workers' Day, we'll be in conversation about the life of Cesar Chavez and the farm workers' struggle of the 1960s. Our guest is Miriam Powell, author of the book The Crusades of Cesar Chavez. That's next on Letters in Politics.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. A BBC team has gained access to Sudan's capital, Khartoum, and has witnessed widespread destruction days after the army retook the city from the rival Rapid Support Forces. Residents of the city told the BBC they were hugely relieved that the RSF were no longer in charge. More from our Africa correspondent, Barbara Pletusher.
At the presidential palace in the heart of Khartoum, soldiers are dancing and singing, convinced that regaining the capital is a turning point in